Welcome, everyone. We have a unique episode here today. I'm with my new friend, Haley Cooper, who you're going to become very familiar with on my side of this anyway. Haley also hosts a podcast called Lead with Heart. And my podcast, as you all know, is From the Heart, presented by the First Bank Center for Family-Owned Businesses. We both wanted to have the other person on our podcast at some point, and so we're going to try something here today. And we're going to, in the old sports radio and TV days, they called it a simulcast, where you had the broadcasters doing TV and radio at the same time. They still do that every now and then. So I guess this is our attempt at a podcast simulcast. I'm going to be on Haley's podcast with this conversation, and Haley is on mine as well. So Haley, it's good to see you. This is fun. We met, we have a lot of mutual friends in the for-profit and obviously the nonprofit world. We finally had a chance to sit down over a cup of coffee a few weeks ago and kind of put this together a little bit. So on my side anyway, welcome to the From the Heart podcast. It's great to see you.
Well, thank you so much for going on this adventure with me. I always say the podcast journey is like an adventure, a roller coaster. We're just going with the flow. And I am excited to also feature this on the Lead with Heart podcast and just have this conversation. When we first met, it was like just a breath of fresh air, getting to talk to someone about just life and faith and all things business. And so I'm excited to actually hit record and bring this conversation to our listeners.
Awesome. Well, you may not think that a nearly 60-year-old male and a 30-something young mom have much in common, but what we do have in common is we have a passion for people and a passion for nonprofits and obviously a passion for God. Probably should have started with that. Starts with God. And everything else in family. We're both family people. So can I start by just asking you how the name Lead with Heart came about? It's a great name. And obviously knowing you the way I do, I get it. But tell both our audiences, I guess, what the Lead with Heart, where that name came from.
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, I had this vision. Sometimes visions come to me. I don't want it to sound too boo-boo, but I was doing this vision exercise with a coach of mine at the time. And it was like, where do you see yourself? And this vision came to me of hosting a podcast. Well, actually it's speaking on stages, but I'm an introvert. And I was like, I got to work up to that. And one of the things that I really knew that I liked was asking good questions. It's something that my dad taught me from an early age is to, you know, have a conversation, ask questions, get to know people. And so, you know, that's the vision that wanted me to create this podcast. And specifically the name came also from that vision, but the work that I do in nonprofits, we're all very passionate people. Mm-hmm. And we often, you know, lead with our brains and forget the heart piece, the heart-centered leadership that can take us even farther and like really building that heart brain connection and to be able to lead well. And so that's kind of where it came from. And I always love on my conversations, we talk a lot about, you know, emotional connection, self-care in terms of like nervous system regulation, mindfulness, leadership, best practices. And most people on my podcast always use, like, you know, when you're reading a book and you like see the title, someone mm-hmm. always utilizes Lead with Heart and like as part right. of the way that they lead their organizations. And so there's so many different ways that people talk about leadership, and it all centers back to that concept of leading with heart. So that's kind
it's
of
very similar for me. I mean, the From the Heart, you know, mine's spelled, I take the E out because my last name is Heart, but people hear the name, they know what it's about. And that's ultimately when people ask me what your podcast is about. You know, I often share that, you know, it's easy to look on your LinkedIn profile or to look at your resume or to have a conversation and find out what you do. The harder thing is getting to the why. And I think the one thing that I have in common, or that my guests have in common, is, I mean, I'll just tee it up now. The last question I'm going to ask you, I'm going to tell you now, don't answer it yet, but it's the last question that I always ask. And that's simply, what's in your heart? And I tell people in advance, oftentimes they're going to get that question and they think they know what they're going to say until I actually ask the question 45 minutes or so into the conversation. So I'm going to hold on to that one and ask you that one again at the end, but maybe think about it. But yeah, for me, it's easy because of the last name. I had a blog for years called From the Heart as well. And I really just, you know, my personality type is I like to get to the heart of why people do what they do, because You know, there's a lot of janitors in the world and no two do it the same way. And there's a lot of presidents in the world and no two do it the same way and everything in between. So more important to me is the why they do what they do.
Wow, that's beautiful. And I think that's so important.
So you want to talk a little bit about the Savvy Fundraiser? I love the term. I love, you're really good with names, you know, Lead with Heart, the Savvy Fundraiser. Right away from those two titles, I know a lot about you.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you want me to back up to like my whole experience or just talk about the present moment in the Savvy Fundraiser?
I'd love
and
to
how
hear,
I got there.
Yeah. I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit of your background, again, the why, going back to what I mentioned, but you know, why you're doing it, how you got into it. And then love to talk a lot in this conversation about specifically what you do and your expertise. And I've got some questions that I like to ask, cause I'm on three nonprofit boards. And just selfishly, a lot of my podcasts, I kind of think of this as just two friends having a cup of coffee and a conversation. So hopefully that's what those that are watching or listening to this today will feel like they're just kind of sitting at the table with us. The only difference is they don't get to ask any questions, but they get to hopefully listen. But yeah, just why you do what you do and pick your brain a little bit.
Yeah, I'm back at you. I'd love to ask questions about your own board experience and all that good stuff. So my journey into nonprofits, I have to give a little bit of context to like how it led to the Savvy Fundraiser, but my professional journey began back in 2012 with a transformative experience in Malawi, Africa, where I co-founded a nonprofit called PB&J, Peanut Butter and Jesus. And this initiative involved the development of a peanut butter product and the establishment of a factory, literally from rubble to operation to sales. And through strategic planning and implementation, I positioned the organization as a supplier for esteemed organizations such as UNICEF and other entities so that we could facilitate widespread distribution across the country. And we weren't just about feeding hungry bellies. It was about nourishing souls and sparking change. Like I said, the name was Peanut Butter and Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
So my journey in nonprofit started in the heart of Africa. And honestly, it's saved my life. It's part of my testimony to coming to Jesus. And it's taken me on places I couldn't even imagine. I mean, I studied kinesiology in college. So to that, now being on my own entrepreneurial journey and starting a nonprofit consulting company, like that's not my vision of where I was going to be 10 years ago.
When you're
ago.
In college, so, you didn't think that's where you were headed. Yeah.
Not at all. So I have, you know, they always say you plan, God laughs. That's
exactly
pretty much what happened, but he put me on this trajectory. And so I had to give that kind of context of like where I started and how I started in the nonprofit. And since then I've worked in a wide array of organizations, specifically focusing on youth and health and human services. And I've worked in both small nonprofits, large nonprofits, and I've worn all of the hats. And in 2021, I was the director of development at a local organization called Giving Children Hope. And at the time I had two kids under two. Now I have three under four. Wow. And it just wasn't realistic for me to continue as a director of development. So when I was on maternity leave, I was, you know, envisioning this idea for the Savvy Fundraiser. And I always say I had my personal board of directors, just like friends and mentors that I had acquired along the way of my nonprofit journey over the last 12 years. And I was like, hey, this is my idea for the Savvy Fundraiser. And do you think this is what nonprofits need? Like, will this solve a problem? And they all said yes. And so I luckily had the privilege at the time to take the leap of faith and start my own entrepreneurial journey in 2022. And, you know, the Savvy Fundraiser is on a mission to shake up the nonprofit world. And my mission is to empower emerging organizations with the tools and expertise they need to thrive. I specialize in designing and implementing dynamic fundraising strategies tailored to the unique needs of each nonprofit that I partner with. And what sets us apart is our holistic approach. So I know that you had Dr. Lola Gershfeld on the podcast, and I'm certified as a trainer in her process, the EMC leadership process. So I don't only help with fundraising strategy, I really help teams communicate and collaborate so that they can deliver on their mission and raise more revenue. And so that's kind of what sets me apart in terms of like the fundraising strategy. So we really actively involve the team, the board, and the community in the entire process, because I really believe changing the world is a team sport, and I really want to build those dream teams that can deliver, that can work together, that feel like they're important to each other and the mission, so that they can invite people in to raise more revenue. And I've also in the past board chair for the Orange County Nonprofit Professionals Network, and I've served on the board in the past of Impact Giving and the Association of Fundraising Professionals Orange County Chapter.
I love that line that it's a team sport. I think about, you know, I played a lot of golf growing up. Competitive golf. I played on a college golf team, and I played a lot of golf and still like to play. I've played some tennis, but one of the things that, and I played a lot of baseball and other team sports, but I love when you hear a golfer, for example, talk about, you know, his team, you know, yeah, we read a left or right break. Yeah, that's him and his caddy. Or yeah, we're playing in the next tournament, or we're doing this. And even though it's the one golfer and his one score against the rest of the field, it's still very much a team sport. You've got your nutritionist, your trainer, your coach, your caddy, your manager, all these people. It's very much a team. So I agree. When I look at, you know, a couple of the boards that I serve on with Julie Hudash at Team Kids, I'm on her board. And then the Paskeys Foundation, which, you know, with Dave Elliott, who I know, you know, Dave, we're very much a team. You know, we're all going out and making asks and talking to people and inviting people. But at the end of the day, you know, we're talking about us. I'm never talking about me, and we're never talking about, you know, one or two of us or even our leader. We're talking about the vision that we have as a team of what we're doing. So I love that fundraising is a team sport. I'm going to hang on to that one.
Yeah, I think it's so important that, you know, and I say this all the time, like we have to take ourselves out of it, especially as founders, because we're so committed to the mission. We're so committed to the vision. But, you know, we talk a lot about on the Lead with Heart podcast, specifically recently, like envisioning that team that can surround you to be able to help you. So, you know, having that vision and then helping the team build a team that can execute on that vision and that mission. Yeah. And knowing that you don't have to do it alone, because especially when you're a founder or a nonprofit leader, it can be really lonely. But it's okay to ask for help and create that team around you, because the innovation and the growth will just accelerate.
So let me, if you don't mind, I'm going to take control of this conversation for just a second on my side, because I know the people that will be listening. It's kind of cool because you and I have a lot of the same audience too. What would you tell the CEO or founder of a nonprofit when it comes to what they should seek when it comes to filling their board? Because a lot of people will get their best friends, or they'll get the people they know in the community, or they'll get, you know, fill. And oftentimes it is the right person. Many times it's not. But what advice do you have for the founder or the CEO or the leader of the nonprofit? And then the follow-up question is going to be more from the board member perspective, but I'll hold on to that one until you answer the first one.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think it's getting really clear on like, what are your goals and strategies for the organization? And where are the gaps that you need to fill? So do you need legal support? Do you need HR support? Do you need someone who's really good at marketing? And obviously, like, you have to set the expectation from the beginning that everyone has to be a part of fundraising. So it's really like getting specific on what your goals and strategies are and how the board can really come in and support you. And I would say, you know, it is good in the beginning probably to hire your friends and like get your friends on the board to get that support. But yeah, I would also invite people that have really different perspectives than you and will have honest conversations around where the organization wants to go, because sometimes we hire our friends because we want them to say yes and be on our team.
Right.
And not that someone with a different perspective isn't on your team, but we need that outside perspective to say, hey, I understand like your feelings are valid, where you're going is valid, but like, what if we thought about this? And it's not that they're disagreeing with you or trying to cause conflict. It's that they are genuinely care about you and the mission, and they want to be able to elevate it. And sometimes there's that like outside perspective that we need when we're so entrenched in the work of the organization to like bring us out and like see a bigger perspective. And so I would say, yeah, the two main things, and I would love your feedback as well, but, you know, getting really clear on what the needs of your organization are, looking for those different perspectives, and then getting clear on how you are going to engage, educate, and encourage your board members to participate because you can put them on the board, but if they're not participating, they're just a seat at the table. It's not going to get you where you want to go.
What are some of the reasons that you've seen from your experience why people don't participate or don't fully engage in being on a board? I can think of a few, but what come to mind for you?
Yeah. So, you know, I always get hired because I'm a CFRE, and the number one concern that I hear that people make is that their board isn't engaged and their board doesn't fundraise. And I think, you know, in my own personal experience in the boards that I've worked with, it's because there's that one lack of onboarding. So people don't feel welcomed. They don't know how their role plays an important part, or their expertise or their skills play a role in helping the organization and the mission. And so they get lost, they get disconnected, and they don't understand why they're supposed to be there. And that leads into fundraising, because if they don't feel confident in their position on the board, they don't feel confident about how they're supposed to communicate about the organization, they're going to shy away from it. So for example, I was working with a board who hired me because their board wasn't fundraising. We've all heard that.
Right.
But when I came into the board, there was a lot of conflict because they didn't, and they were talking in circles and talking around each other, but they were talking the same thing. And so my job, and like I said, working with Dr. Lilva Gershfeld, was to go into the mission and really get to the underneath of the conflict, which is never about content. It's always about emotional disconnection. And these people felt disconnected from each other. There was also a lot of fear on the board that if they left, the organization wouldn't exist anymore, that all their hard work would have been for nothing. But each person on that board felt that way, but they had never communicated it in a room. And so utilizing the process that we do, it helped them slow down and like really understand how important they were to each other and the mission. And then I also think another thing is for lack of engagement, or is lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
So when you need to equip your board members with the knowledge and tools so they can confidently take on their roles as fundraisers and ambassadors. So whether that's giving them like a toolkit to like, here's the key messages you need. On the board that I serve of OCMPN, like we have FAQs, we have a messaging guide so that if we go out to a networking event, we know how we're supposed to communicate about the organization, and every single person on the board has that. Our board is also specifically around networking events and one of the aspects. So we've trained people on how to network and like questions to ask and things like that. So being able to educate your board on what it means to be a fundraiser and, you know, what are the best practices and communication strategies. And of course, what is the art of the ask? Because we all know board members shy away from that. So, you know, really making them feel comfortable with fundraising, and then, you know, encouraging them and building a culture of encouragement that you celebrate achievements and celebrate and recognize their contribution to the organization.
Yeah. I like that, because a couple of the boards I've served on over time, and even the two that I'm on now, have done this really well. I'm on three, but two of the three have done it really well. The third one's pretty new, and actually I think Small Business Diversity Network with Jay Ungos, I think he does as good of a job as any on this, is really clearly identifying, just like if you hire someone into your organization, they have a job description, they know what's expected of them. There's a performance review process, not necessarily that you would do that on with your board, but a job description, what's expected. I think where I've stepped off of boards in the past is either A, I didn't fully buy into the vision or the leader, or I just wasn't clear what was expected of me. You know, I didn't have that toolkit as you talk about. Mm-hmm. I knew what we did and I knew what we were about, but I didn't, honestly, in one of them, I didn't even know that fundraising was part of the role because they never talked about it with us. And when I stepped off, they said, well, you know, we would have loved to have worked with you more on some fundraising. It's like, well, you never told me that. I mean, I should know that, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I need education on that specific. I mean, I know how to ask for money and I know how to fundraise and I know a lot of the key components that it takes of building the relationships and trust and everything else. But, you know, if I don't know a lot about the organization, it's really hard for me to convince somebody that they should, you know, write a check, so to speak, or invest their time or be a supporter of what we're doing. So no, that's really, really good advice. Make sure people are clear. on what the nonprofit vision is and who we support and what we do. Give them a chance to go out and experience it firsthand. You know, you join the board of Habitat for Humanity, the first thing they're going to do is put you on a habitat build. They want you to go out there and see it and pound some nails and really learn what they do so that you can talk about it. Hey, when I was doing this, this is what we did. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, and I think what you said about like having that job description is so important and, you know, setting out those expectations from the beginning, explicitly telling yeah. people that this is part of their role and like inviting them. And I think, you know, maybe it's not performance reviews, but, you know, specifically on the OCMPM board, like we have a mentorship program where we check in with our new board members, our current board members, like twice a year. And we're just like, hey, like, what's coming up for you? How can we support you? And creating a safe conversation for people to voice their concerns and anything that might come up for them that they want to change or that's going really well, right? Yeah. But it's not necessarily like an annual review like you would a job performance, but right. It's having those opportunities to say, hey, we know, and we also do a strength-based assessment. So it's like, this is your strength. Is this aligning with your role? Or are there ways that we can better utilize you to be more effective and utilize your time in a better way? And so, you know, that strength-based approach is also helpful to align board members with where they want to go, because not everyone wants to do silent auctions or auction mm-hmm. gifts, right, as part of fundraising, yeah. but maybe they like networking events and they like to gather people. So could they host a house party? Could they invite people to a restaurant? Like there's so many different ways to be involved. And so it's really understanding, you know, those passions and interests of the people and back yeah. to, you know, from the heart, like why did they join the board in the first place exactly. and aligning that all together to engage them in a meaningful way.
You know, I had a boss years ago who one of the things that he did so well, a lot of things, but one of the things he did, he treated each of us as employees as we were more like board members on a nonprofit. And that, look, you have a lot of companies where you could work. Are we meeting your needs? You know, it's always, you know, you think of the performance review, it's always the boss asking the employee or coaching the employee or counseling with the employee. But the really high quality organizations understand that the employee is making a choice to be there, to put their time and their talent and their treasure, so to speak, into that organization. And I really liked how that one boss of mine would always, you know, most of the conversation was, is this job, is this organization, am I as a boss meeting your needs? Because I know you have options. And so to take that more into the nonprofit board world as well, hey, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Smith, who joined my board a year ago, are you getting out of this what you hope to? You know, why did you do this for the networking? Did you do this because you're passionate about the cause? Did you do this because of the people on the board? Do you feel like you're making an impact? Those are the things when I look at being on a board. I've talked with a few close friends recently about this. You know, why do we join boards? And, you know, one, it's a cause that we believe in, and chime in where I'm off, because these are things that only I think about necessarily. You know, is it a cause that I believe in? Is it a leader that I believe in? I'll use Passkeys as an example, or Team Kids, you know, with Julie Hudash of Team Kids or Dave Elliott of Passkeys. I believe in them. I believe in the vision. I believe in what they're doing. I feel like I can make an impact with my passion and my talents, but also I love to serve with the people that are on those boards. I mean, these are friends of mine, people that I do business with, people that I socialize with, people that I love and trust. And, you know, if all of those factors aren't there, it might be hard to get somebody to really be successful on a board, I would think.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with all of that.
Yeah. What would you tell a person who's going onto a board? What other than those things that I just mentioned, what do you do when you work with the board members to help them become better at their role on the board?
Yeah. So specifically like with this board that I worked with and also with the board that I sit on with OCMPN, it's really getting clear on like, what do you want to get out of the organization as well? Right. Like what are your goals and how can this help your professional or personal journey? Like if it's personal, how can being on this board help you realize your generosity through the organization? If it's professional, like, how is this advancing your career? And, you know, I would also say, like, I always, when I join a board, I'm like, I'm all in, put me to work. Like, you're going to get out what you put in.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a meaningful experience, you're going to have to put in the work. You're going to have to be an active member and really be clear about understanding the expectations that are expected of you.
Right.
And, you know, asking like, hey, so like just asking questions and making sure it's clear, but really jumping in and being a part of the team. And yeah, I think those are important pieces for joining a board.
What do you love about the work that you do?
I love changing lives. And I love, you know, being able to, when my kids ask me why I have to go to work, what I do for work, you know, really instilling that belief that was instilled in me from a young age of philanthropy, of giving back, of service. And, you know, I really love working with multiple different teams now that some of the problems are the same, but all have unique issues.
Yeah.
And being able to help solve them in a strategic and heart-led way. And, you know, specifically with the work that I do, seeing that click where like that spark in someone's eye, where like they get it or they get excited and they start to talk about all the ways that they can move the mission forward. And so I know I've done my job well and someone else is doing my job for me. And so that's where I just like to work with passionate people that are making an impact and helping me realize my own philanthropic journey through the work that I do.
Yeah. Yeah. We like, at the end of the day, we want to know we're making an impact.
And what so, about you? I want to shoot.
Yeah. I think for me, it's funny. I just had lunch today with a longtime friend in the family business arena. And we had talked a lot about impact and influence. And for me, that's just it. If I feel like I can have an influence, I don't like the term social media influencer. I'm 59 mm-hmm. years old. I don't think of myself as a social media influencer, nor is that a goal of mine. But the influencer side is, I want to have an impact. I want people, after they meet with me and sit down with me and talk with me, to feel like, you know, maybe they have a little bit better perspective on things. Maybe they feel, you know, closer to God. Maybe they feel closer to their work. They have more of a love for what they do. There's a lot of competing forces in this world that are trying to get our attention. All you got to do is drive down a freeway and look at the billboards to realize that there's a lot of garbage out there trying to get us distracted. And, we all have 1,000 channels on our television to distract us, and billboards to distract, and phones in our hands to distract. And my hope is that when I meet with somebody or chat with somebody, that they might feel a little bit more directed and a little bit more influenced and guided in the positive steps. I can't control that, but I certainly try to, you know, help people see the value that they add. You know, I think one of the reasons why the From the Heart podcast is called that, not just because of my last name and the trying to get to the why, but I think that as we get into, and you're a great example of this, just from the little bit that we've known each other, if you really reach deeply into your heart, that's where you're going to make an impact on people. You know, there's a lot of smart people in this world who are just wandering around aimlessly because they don't really have a direction or a passion. And there's a lot of really passionate people that aren't really smart, but I'll take the passionate person with less smarts over the brainiac with no passion and no heart, because those are the people who can make a difference. So I think you and I have that in common. We've both named our podcast with the word heart in it. You know, we have very similar visions. Yeah, I just want to make an impact. I just want to be, I want to make sure that the room's cleaner when I left than it was when I came in. I want to make sure that the conversation I had with somebody, that they feel loved and appreciated and they feel seen. One of the things, somebody asked me recently, what breaks my heart? And I ask that question to people a lot on the podcast and all otherwise. And I think that one of the things that breaks my heart the most is loneliness. When people feel lonely, you can be in a room full of 100 people and feel alone or feel lonely, and you can be by yourself and not feel lonely. But it breaks my heart when, you know, an elderly person or a child, especially, or, you know, even a 35-year-old, you know, feels alone or lonely. That just breaks my heart. It means that, you know, sometimes it's our own fault. You know, if I'm lonely, I can do something about it, but oftentimes it's not. And so, you know, I just want people to know that I appreciate them. I see them. I love them. God loves them. And that's really what I try to have drive me anyway.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I mean, loneliness is an epidemic. It is.
Our mental health crisis is loneliness is one of the main reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And like you said, like, yeah, making people feel seen and heard. And you know what's funny is someone at an organization I was working at, we were talking about success and how success is defined differently for every single
Yeah.
person. And you know, someone thinks financial success, someone thinks something else. And he's like, Haley, what does success mean to you? And I said, if my life has been w lived well and give like in a way that gives glory to God. And I
Yeah.
think, you know, that's not a traditional approach, but with living that way, abundance comes, right? And there are obviously there's hardships that come
Yeah.
along with being a believer as well, but I think there's more abundance, there's more peace, and that's how I want my life to be lived, and that's like what success means to me.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I think it's just so unique, and each person has their own definition of what it means to them.
No, I love that. You triggered something that I've been asked that too, and I've asked that question of others, you know, how do you define success and are you a success based on your definition? But something that really hit me hard before, and again, as you were just talking about it, is that that thought that trying to figure out how to phrase this. That definition of success, as the world puts it, you know, like you said, it can be the paycheck or the big car or the nice house or what have you, or the nice house, big car, whatever, however you want to put it. I just put it the same way twice. I'm stumbling on my thoughts. But when I was working at Cal State Fullerton running the Center for Family Business, I did some research, not as a professor, because I wasn't a full professor there, but I still did a lot of research on that word success. And first identified, you know, what my definition of success was and is. And then as I looked at other people and kind of, you know, hey, do you consider yourself a success? Yes. And then we dive into the conversation further about it. Ultimately, what it came down to is the most successful people that I found over the years of talking to people about this was a giving heart. You know, they are very philanthropic. They give back to the community, they give to their organizations. They support causes that are near and dear to them and to their employees. Never did it come down to I have the house on the beach overlooking the ocean and I drive the Ferrari. I mean, yeah, there are successful people who have those things, but ultimately it comes down to what do we give? You know, we go through life giving more than, you know, what's in it for others as opposed to what's in it for me.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And one of my friends, Jen Klein, wrote a book, Giving is Selfish. And she also has a podcast called You Are a Philanthropist. And it's this idea that the generosity you give like boomerangs back to you. And, you know,
Yeah.
really giving, it was based on like a what's his name? I forget his name. The guy who was in Remember the Titans.
Oh,
Why can't
Denzel
you remember?
Washington.
Denzel Washington, he gave a
Yeah.
speech about this idea that giving is selfish. And so she based her whole book on it. And it's a really good book. But yeah, it's about that idea of the more generous you are, the more it boomerangs back to you.
Yeah. The more you give, the more you receive. You have to, I've done a lot of, I wouldn't say study or research. I've paid attention a lot to the old book and movie, The Secret, and that law of abundance and creating things. And I've heard stories of people who, you know, clean out their garage so that there's room for that new car that they want to create, or they empty the drawers in their dresser because they want to create the abundance to get more clothes or whatever. And heck, I drive around in a parking lot and I right away go to, okay, there's gonna be a great parking space in front. And it happens. And is it coincidence? Yeah, maybe. Did I create it myself? No, maybe I prayed for it. I don't know. I mean, you know, I do believe that we have that power to create. I don't think it's in us alone. I think that God obviously is the reason for that. But when we recognize the power that we have, and I think that's a big part as well, is recognizing the power that other people have. You know, I love the hashtag that I use on my podcast a lot. Everyone has a story. Because, you know, I've interviewed some famous people where people will tune in because of the name. But my favorite podcasts, honestly, have been with people that nobody knows who they are, but their story is so powerful. And sometimes it doesn't even come up. I didn't know their story till we're in the conversation. And then they say something and it's like, whoa, mind blown. And that's, you know, everybody has a powerful story, whether it's, you know, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, to name the two most famous people in our country for whatever reasons, you know, all the way down to people you've never heard of. So talk about emotional connection. You talked about Dr. Lola Gershfeld. She was a guest on the podcast. I'm writing a book right now called Boomer Wisdom, which is wisdom of about 40 different individuals who were each writing a chapter to the next generation. And I'll maybe talk about that later, but Lola's writing a chapter for that book. Talk about that, not just the process, the EMC, but just when you hear the terms emotional connection, what do you think of, especially from the perspective of your job as running this foundation, this organization you've started?
Yeah. And I was just on her podcast recording right before this. So
awesome.
I could talk about it all day.
There you go.
So yeah, I found Dr. Lola Gershfeld in 2019 when I held the role of development manager at a local organization dedicated to serving women and children. And I stumbled upon her through LinkedIn because she had conducted a workshop via EC of OC, which is Executive Coaches of Orange County. And I, at the time, was faced with a really challenging organizational landscape marked by interpersonal conflict and like really strained team dynamics. And I was really eager for guidance and support. I had done like every single training under the sun at 1OC on fundraising, program management, finance, but there wasn't really any training about leadership and like managing conflict within a team and like managing, leading people, not just managing them, but leading them. So, you know, in the midst of this conflict, like I really wanted to seek out these strategies for fostering cohesion, fostering unity, fostering collaboration, because we were all stuck in this negative cycle. And so I found the EMC process, and Dr. Lola Gershfeld founded it, and it's based on attachment science that says, when we work together, we depend on each other, and that dependence creates an attachment, and that creates a bond. And emotional connection is the glue that holds that bond together. But like you were saying earlier, like you love to make people feel seen and heard. But in an organization, when you don't feel seen and heard, that's when emotional connection, disconnection happens. Because conflict is never about content. It's about that emotional disconnection where I feel alone. I no longer feel like you're supporting me or you're in this with me. I'm lost. I feel alone. And so we get into these habits. And it's funny because I recorded on a podcast and someone's like, our childhood wounds show up in our adult life. Yeah. Like things that happened in our past, let's say we feel rejected or we feel like we're not good enough. That turns on our amygdala, which is where we house our emotions, and our emotions are a higher processing system. They keep us safe. But when our amygdala is heightened, it turns off our prefrontal cortex, and our prefrontal cortex is where we communicate and we collaborate. And so we lose those critical functionings, and it's just neuroscience, right? Like it's how our brain operates. And so we go into ineffective coping strategies. So specifically in this organization that I was working with, I was writing grants and I was trying to get responses and I wasn't getting the email back. So what did I do? I kept sending emails until I got some sort of response, but it wasn't the response I wanted.
Right.
And learning this process, it was like, okay, now I need to sit down with my ED and understand how she's feeling. Like, what's the source of this disconnection? What she needs to feel supported in her role, and, you know, voicing what I need to feel supported so that we could get into that positive cycle of engagement. And, you know, really break down those barriers. And sometimes it's just a conversation. Sometimes it's multiple conversations. But, you know, I've really been able to leverage these EMC principles to enhance fundraising leadership and, you know, foster more harmonious and effective working environments. Because at the end of the day, we need a culture of open communication and collaboration that really fosters innovation and growth.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that we utilize in this process, and I've utilized it in my own work, is six phrases. And it's basically like, I hear you. I see you. Your feelings are valid. And I remember I was working in another organization and there was a lot of transition, and there's always a lot of transition in nonprofits, and people feel alone. They don't feel like And especially with a new CEO, that new CEO is going to come in with a vision and people get lost and they don't understand how their current role plays in this vision. So that was happening. There wasn't a lot of change management or good transition, but you know, people got lost. And so utilizing these six phrases, I was able to help people slow down their emotions, unlock their amygdala so that they could communicate and collaborate and see how their role fitted in the organization, or maybe it didn't. And that's okay too, but they didn't make an emotional decision. They made a logical decision that, okay, I understand, like I was able to slow down, see how I'm feeling, see how this affects me. This is what I need to feel supported in my role. And if that's not accessible here, then maybe it's time to move on. If it is, I'm going to stay and I'm going to feel supported in my role. So I've really seen this process, you know, overcome the challenges that nonprofits face with, you know, really creating a space where emotions can be acknowledged and understood so that we can ultimately achieve greater success together.
Yeah, and I've heard it said a lot that people don't quit jobs, they quit bosses. And a lot of that is because they don't have that emotional connection. I think that's why a lot of relationships, he never listens to me anymore. He doesn't hear me. He doesn't see me. You know, that can be said for spouses or, you know, dating relationships or just friends. I have a lot of friendships that have ended because there just wasn't that emotional connection. Maybe we had it for a while because we had something in common. Maybe we served together at church together or we worked together. But the emotional bond was the where we were more than anything else. We were emotional about that location. Take that location out of it and it's gone. So how do you build that? What are some of the ways that we can build that emotional connection? I mean, I know it takes time and it's, you know, sometimes it just clicks, you meet somebody and it's instant, but when it's not, I mean, how do you build that connection?
Yeah. And that's funny that you say that about relationships, for answer your question, because I had to train my husband on those six phrases because not to like stereotype men, but
go ahead.
He's also a CPA. So okay. He's a very logical,
very
fix
logical,
it man.
Person,
and every
sure.
time I come, and I'm an emotional person.
Me
so
too.
I would come to him with my emotions and he's like, this is how you fix it. This is what you do. And I'm like, I just need you to like empathize with me. I don't need you to fix it. And so now he goes, Haley, I hear you. I see you. Like your feelings are valid. And like, I'm like, I'll ask you for advice if I need advice.
Yeah. And he's not being sarcastic.
He really means it. Yeah. And you know, you can feel in your heart that like, oh, I do feel seen and supported because, you know, on the Maslow hierarchy of needs, like safety and belonging are
huge.
Besides food, water, and shelter, like those are our higher needs.
Yeah.
And so being able to feel that and, you know, so in terms of, you know, how to build those positive cycles of engagement, how to repair. And sometimes the, you know, relationship is too far gone that repair is really hard, but ideal is repair. And I mean, I do this with my kids. I do this with my husband. I facilitate these in workplaces. So we utilize these reconnection form and it pretty much explains, you know, what are your automatic triggers? It helps you slow down your emotion. We use the slow motion camera to like really slow down because emotions are fast. So what are your automatic triggers and responses? What are your primary emotions that come up? What are your fears about the organization? What are your fears about yourself? What are your fears about your relationship with the other person? And then, you know, do you have any bodily sensations? Like, do you feel it like in your heart? Do you feel it in your throat? Like you can't speak up? Is there a texture to it? And so really getting people to understand that. And then in individual or paired sessions, you flip it and you say, well, what is this person feeling in this situation? And so you begin to, not that if you're in conflict and someone said something mean that they're in the right, but, and they need to be held accountable for the actions, but you can start to build some more empathy for that person and really understand, oh, maybe this was their fear, or they had pressure from, you know, I had instances where bosses had pressure from the CEO, and then you take them out of the context of that organization and we get along great, you know?
Yeah.
But so it's really like having that empathy for the other person and then building those bonding conversations. So what do I need in this moment to feel supported? And continuing those conversations in your weekly meetings, like, how did you feel supported this week? What do you need to feel more supported? And asking what I like to say is generative questions that lead to that positive future that you're both wanting to create. And reminding yourself that you have these tools to slow down, to become more self-aware of, I always say self-aware leaders are exceptional leaders, to become more self-aware of what's coming up for you, because self-awareness is like the first step to change. And so, you know, being more aware of your emotions, making space for your emotions, because, you know, I grew up where I had to stuff down my emotions, and now I'm, you know, making space for them and learning what's coming up for me and validating them and seeing what I need to move forward. And so facilitating those repair and reconnection conversations helps people to understand, again, that you're not alone in this. You matter to each other, and getting them back on the same page that they care for each other and they care for the mission, and they're working together to achieve the same goal.
I love that term you use, self-awareness. I think a lot of emotional intelligence, you know, kind of similar, you know, synonymous in some ways. You know, that leader that has a lot of emotional control, a lot of emotional intelligence, that's self-aware. So many people are just not. I was talking about somebody recently, a good friend of mine, who when we first met, I wouldn't have labeled this person as someone who was very self-aware, almost a little bit socially awkward, a little bit, you know, leadership awkward, if you will. This person led, this person unfortunately is no longer with us, passed away not long ago, but he was somebody that didn't appear to me as being very self-aware, didn't recognize how he came across. But as I got to know him, I started to realize, you know, this is his style, this is who he is. And I started realizing he's incredibly self-aware. You know, it's just my first impression was that he wasn't, but as I got to know him and saw him around his people, one of the things they loved about him was, you know, almost kind of that self-deprecating humor that he had, and, you know, didn't always put himself down, but knew when to do it. Never put his people down, but always knew when to just like put himself at their level, say, look, you guys are the experts here. I'm just a dummy that came in from, you know, off the farm in North Dakota or wherever he was from. And people really loved that. But in the one-on-one initially, the conversations with him, I didn't pick up on that. It wasn't until I really saw him around people and I saw how other people saw him who really knew him that I thought, man, this guy's more self-aware than I realize. So I always say my favorite people are the people who are very authentic and very have a high emotional intelligence, people who just kind of get it. You know, they're not saying the awkward things. I can come across sometimes as being awkward. I'll say the wrong thing and I'll go, oh, I can't believe I just said that. But probably said a few of those on this podcast even. So, but
I mean, I'm awkward. I'm introverted. I own it. But I think it's embracing that messiness and emotional connection is like about embracing that messiness and making space for messiness. And also like taking time to get to know people, because on the surface, they might seem one way. And below, like, you'll get to know why their actions are how they respond to certain situations. And so really making time for those relationships is so important. And I think it's the work we all have to do, the inner work that we have to do.
I started writing a book years ago called First Impressions, and the subtitle of it was The Art of Getting to Know People. Never finished the book. I've written many, many chapters on it, and maybe it'll see the light of day in the world. Maybe it'll just stay here on my laptop as a folder. But I started thinking about this a couple of years ago, and a quote that I heard somewhere, and I can't remember who to attribute it to, but I'm sure you've heard it as well, that it's better to be, how does it say? It's better to be more interested than interesting, you know? And ultimately, the people that I like being around are the people that are more interested, not interested in me, but just interested in learning, interested in other people and why people do what they do, and not so much focused on being interesting. You know, be the most interested person in the room, not the most interesting person in the room, I think is how the person said it when I first heard it. And I loved that, because it's like, you know, when I meet somebody and they're just curious, You ever watch Ted Lasso?
That's a good
Okay.
one.
So one of my favorite scenes in there is the dart scene when he's playing darts with the ex-husband of the current owner of his team and the Walt Whitman quote, be curious, not judgmental. I thought I love that quote. And the reason it resonates with me is because curious people light my fire. I think that's why I do this podcast. I love to find out why people do what they do, and it's that curiosity. So that's why I was excited to meet you when I saw you at the fundraising event we went to together. Not together, but we were both there a couple months ago. I kept hearing about you, and I'd seen you on LinkedIn, and I'd heard about what you do, and I know a lot of people who know you, and my curiosity sparked. I said, I got to go back there and talk to her and just introduce myself. So sounds like we both had been talked about by other people as well. So.
Yeah, definitely. And I think back to your point about emotional intelligence. I was talking to my husband the other day about this, and I think we were talking about like EQ and how that is higher than IQ.
Yeah.
Because in most instances, because like you said before, like people don't quit organizations, they quit bosses. And
Yeah.
so I think nowadays, that emotional intelligence piece and that curiosity and that, always wanting to learn is an important, are important values, as a human and as a leader.
Yeah. Heard a podcast recently on how to relate deeply and quickly with people was the title of the podcast. The guest wrote a book on that, I think. And she mentioned that there's three things when people are talking to you that they're usually seeking one of three things, sometimes two, sometimes all three, but I jotted it down. They're looking just to be heard. Sometimes, our spouse will come home from work or come home from somewhere, or I'll come home from work and she just wants to not vent isn't the right word, but just to be heard. Here's my day. I don't need you to do anything. I just want to tell you about it. Sometimes they need to be hugged. Sometimes it's very emotional and what they're looking for. This happens with kids a lot too. They just need a hug. They just need a squeeze. And sometimes they need to be helped. I'm sharing this with you because I want you to help me. I've got a problem. I want you to help me fix it. It's imperative on us, or it's important for us as the listener to identify, is Haley talking to me because she just wants me to hear her? Is she talking to me because she wants me to give her a hug? Is she talking to me because she wants me to help her or help fix the situation? And I shared that with somebody today, and she said, or not hurt. That's that fourth H. Just don't hurt me with what I'm sharing with you because I don't want you to hurt me on this. But I think it's powerful. People just want to be heard sometimes. Sometimes they really do want to be helped. And sometimes all they're asking for, hey, just give me a hug, whether it's a literal or a figurative hug. Just show me that you hear me and that you understand. So what are some of the big goals that you have for the Savvy fundraiser or for Lead with Heart? What do you envision out there on the horizon for either or both organization?
So I wrote this on my LinkedIn, the three areas that I'm looking for help, because I can't do it alone and I only have
Yeah.
so much brain expertise with
I hear
raising
you.
three young
Hear me
kids.
both.
And I have to say my zone of genius. So the three areas that I'm working on right now are really, and we talked about this, is trying to build my Lead with Heart podcast into a business because I really love interviewing people. I love learning from other people. And soon I will be doing my own solo podcast episodes. That's my goal next month, is to record them.
Nice.
Yeah, I think really build somehow figuring out how to build it into a business, where I can continue to bring valuable content to listeners. I get great reviews on it, so not to toot my own horn, but
Right, no,
I
it's
want
good.
to be able to continue to create valuable, because I was talking to someone the other day. It's like nonprofits don't really invest in professional development, but if I could provide 45 minutes of value that you can take back into your organization, like that is my gift to you.
And it didn't cost
And
you
my gift
anything,
of
right?
my guests to you as well. And
Yeah.
like also feeling like you're not alone in the world of nonprofits.
Yeah.
The other goal that I have is a personal goal. And I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this yet, but I am writing a book. So,
Nice.
and it is about my testimony and my come to Jesus moment. So I told my
Awesome.
parents they're not allowed to read the first three chapters of the book because it talks about my brokenness.
That's
But,
probably going to be the best part of the book, because there's one thing that we all identify with is we all feel broken at times.
But like in the intro, I'm going to write, you know, we all like to skip the Old Testament because there's so much brokenness, there's so much battle, whatever. We all like to skip to the Jesus part. But sometimes, you know, the Old Testament leads to the gospel and Jesus is the fulfillment of it. So I'm like, well, you know, sometimes we got to talk about the hard stuff to lead to the good stuff. So,
We don't appreciate the good stuff unless we've had the hard stuff either.
Yeah. And then with my own business, just, you know, figuring out, I've really niched down on what I'm offering, like I said in the beginning, which is fundraising strategy for emerging nonprofits. So of course, any referrals or clients who are in need of their fundraising strategy, is always helpful, because I am here to help grow nonprofits and help them solve the world's greatest problems.
I love it. And that's ultimately, that's what I love about it. I tell people my favorite thing about working with family businesses is that every family business, regardless of their industry, they're doing it because it's a passion. I mean, I've been to steel manufacturing companies and coffee companies and hospitality all over the place and consulting companies and you name the industry. And I know family businesses in those industries, and everybody seems very passionate about it. And then I flip over into the nonprofit world. And, you know, I mean, I could rattle off the names of nonprofit leaders that you and I know in common, you know, everything from after school programs for women and children to, you know, domestic violence shelters to you name it. And everybody has their passion for why they're doing what they're doing. And I think that that's just, you know, for me, my goals are to continue to, you know, reach people. I mean, I don't know if my podcast will ever be a business, but it's certainly, and I've thought about that. I jotted that down as you said it, because, you know, I've monetized it before and I have a sponsor now at First Bank. They're my employer, but they're also, you know, a sponsor of the podcast. So I guess I have turned it into a business a little bit, but yeah, just constant growth, you know, and always being open. I always want to be open to, I won't say all possibilities, because not all possibilities are wholesome or good or are on the right path, but recognizing where my talents are and then being open to possibilities to utilize those talents and develop the talents further. And like, there are a lot of opportunities for me to go do things that I just won't do because they're not in alignment with who I am and what I like to do. But, you know, it's always nice to look at options and see how we can touch people's lives. I think that's like with this podcast, you know, we're creating content for people hopefully to utilize and make their lives a little bit better, maybe do their jobs better. Maybe they get an answer to a prayer or an answer to a stupor of thought they're having on how to do something. So it's good that we're both doing this. It's fun. It's fun doing this with you today.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, that alignment piece is so important as well. Like in our own businesses, we get real clear on values and missions, but I found in my own personal life, like I have to do the same. Like I have my own set of personal mission, vision and values, and I have one for my family as well. And so, you know, like recently I was going through a job interview process and ended up that, you know, just didn't align in this season. Not that it's like a no forever, but it was like really getting clear because I wanted to say yes, but my husband had to remind me of my mission, vision and values.
Right.
Because I'm a yes person and a people pleaser. So I want to,
you and me both,
like, you know, say yes to every opportunity that comes my way, but having that guiding path of like, this is what I'm committed to. And of course it can change in the seasons, but like right now it's like, this is my guiding mission, my guiding values, what's important to me. And I have to remember to make decisions that are in alignment with that, because if I don't, then it's going to feel icky to me. I'm going to get frustrated and I'm not going to deliver my best work. So people are always like, what are you excited about this year? And I'm like, honestly saying no, because I've gotten really clear on what matters to me right now. And saying no to opportunities that don't align, even though every instinct inside of me wants to say yes. Yep. But it feels like I feel at peace when I have that.
I feel the same way. I have a close friend, you may know Jenny Dinnan, McKenzie Corporation. Yeah, she and I both tend to like to say yes to a lot of things, and we always coach each other on we'll like call each other or text each other. Guess what? I said no to today. And it's like, it's so awesome. I asked her a few months ago about being on a board and involved with something else. And she came back with no to both of those. And I just wrote back, I'm so proud of you. You know, as much as I wanted her to be on these with me, it's like, you know, I love that, you know, and I read an article years ago, Psychology Magazine came out with an article probably 15 years ago called The Power of No, and just how liberating it can be, you know, for us to say no. When we say no to one thing, we're saying yes to something else. I've shared that, you know, that term FOMO, fear of missing out. You know, I miss out. I miss it when other friends of mine are doing things together and I'm not there, or family or what have you. But I've learned lately to have more of the joy, the JOMO, the joy of missing out.
Yeah.
Because what it means to me is if I missed something, if I didn't go to an event or I wasn't at a breakfast with a bunch of my friends, it's probably because I chose to do something that was a better yes. You know, and so it might have been just I decided to sit and have a cup of coffee and breakfast with my wife, which is always the better yes.
You know?
Yes. But if I choose to stay home and have coffee with her in the morning, as opposed to going to breakfast with friends, I don't have that fear of missing out anymore, because I know I'm doing something that is just feels like it's the right place for me to be at that right time. So, yeah, this is time well spent. I like this. This is a fun experiment that we're, you know, sort of interviewing each other and talking to each other about why we do what we do. How do people get in touch with you? If I'm a nonprofit, or if I want to be, you know, learn more about your podcast, how do people reach you?
You can hang out with me on LinkedIn. That's where I hang out. Feel free to DM me. Haley Cooper, CFRE. I'm also obviously the Lead with Heart podcast, and my website is thesavvyfundraiser.com. Where can people find you, Ed?
So Ed Hart on LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn as well. If you Google Ed Hart family business, chances are I'll come up. My day job is I'm a senior VP for First Bank, the Center for Family-Owned Businesses. We're First Bank's a fourth generation privately held bank headquartered in St. Louis. I oversee family business education and consulting for the bank here on the West Coast. And so that's my job by day. And I guess also my job by day is hosting the From the Heart podcast. I'm always looking for great guests. I'm always looking for good recommendations on good books. I'm looking for great recommendations on good movies, good Netflix shows to watch. You know, I love education. I love to, you know, just bring, I send stupid dad jokes to my kids and grandkids and nieces and nephews all the time. So if you know any good dad jokes, pass them my way. So always looking for great content.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for experimenting with me.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed this conversation. Like, I mean, I do have my cup of coffee at.
There you go.
3 p.m.
I had espresso after lunch at the restaurant that I was at. So I'll probably go have another cup of coffee now. So as we wrap up on at least episode 96 of the From the Heart podcast, and on Haley's episode as well of Lead with Heart, let me just ask you this, Haley Cooper. What's in your heart?
That's a good question. I'm going to shoot it back to you. I think what's in my heart is, like I said, I am working on becoming an author. And I think through that book is really giving inspiration to people that they can turn their lives around and live out a greater purpose. And so I'm hoping that, you know, that is my life purpose. Is to be a light to people. And so whatever platform that takes is really inspiring people to, you know that they can do it.
I love that. Nobody's ever really asked me. It's funny, as you said, you're going to shoot it back at me. I thought, okay, yeah. What am I going to say?
What's on your heart?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's my hope is that other people can see God in me, and that I can see God in other people as well. And my wife, I'm kind of stealing that from my wife a little bit. That's a major passion of hers, just to see God in other people. And she does. And as she has shared that with me over the years, it really has resonated and sunk more deeply into me of just, I think that's ultimately why we're here. See, you know, for those that are not believers in God and in Jesus, your interpretation of that can be just to see good in other people. You know, I want people to see good in me, and I want to see good in other people as well. And I think that if we approach every relationship and every conversation we have, that this is a really good person that God loves a whole lot more than I ever will. And this is a good person who really has my best intentions in mind. then life's a little bit easier.
What a more peaceful world we would have.